welcome, welcome. How cool is this? My name's Chris Raymer. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. How cool is this? This is nice. I hate doing outside talk. This is nice. What is it about the South? You know, I'm from Texas. I'm as South as you can get. You know, but the Deep South is where we are now. I mean, it's different. It's different. Food's different. What was that we ate tonight? I've had several try to explain it to me, and I stopped them when it got to the parts part. I don't know. But I don't care what it was excellent, and I thank them for cooking it. And what an honor to be here. What is it about Southern women, too? Jesus. You're in the wrong part of the world, brother. I want to thank Chaz for calling me and Gene for help. Anybody that helped get me here, I'm honored to be here. I need to apologize about the way I'm dressed. I just believe if you speak from the podium, you should dress up a little bit. And I have a wrinkled suit that's somewhere between here and San Antonio. And I don't know. I'm lucky I got here with the airports being as weird as they are with all the stuff that's happened this last week. So I'm delighted to be here. And I know how difficult it is. Used to be, I was over in Florence not long ago, and I mentioned this. I used to be you could get a plane ticket anywhere for $100, and it was no big deal. And it takes money to bring somebody over here. And I'm honored and truly humbled that y'all would have even considered doing this for me. I'm blessed. I hate to speak. I just need to tell you, most of y'all that know me know that. I love meeting y'all. I just know that... I'm probably going to end up saying something up here that offends somebody, and I don't want to do that. But no, I don't. I just know I will. People get so dogmatic about this. I talk about this all the time. You know, it's, well, my sponsor said this. You know, well, my treatment center said this. Well, my counselor said this. Well, I don't give a rat's butt. You know, I what does the book say? What does the big book say? And I've never got up from a podium and shared yet, ever, in 18 years of sobriety, that I didn't carry a big book with me. And if you hear anything I say that you can't reconcile, absolutely forget it. Just let it go in one ear and out the other. I spent so many years in Alcoholics Anonymous, 7 years in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous relapsing, doing the same thing I've talked to some of y'all out here that are doing, and you've tried this before and failed, and tried it before and failed, and it's just, you know, after a while we start losing hope, you know, and it's a tough deal. And I finally came back in 1987. I'm going to tell you a little bit about it, and I landed in a nest of big book thumpers, and they started explaining to me about what this was about, and all of a sudden I started doing what they asked me to do, and I got well. And that's why Dennis just read the 10th step promises, where it talks about we're going to be placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. And that's the best promise in the book, folks. And that's why I introduced myself the way the big book asked me to introduce myself, as a recovered ED alcoholic, dope fiend. Some of you don't like that. You think it's not humble? Couldn't give a rat's ass. I feel better already. No, it's that I know, and I'm going to talk about it some tonight, but I mean, I know that the only game in town is our fellowships, our Alcoholics Anonymous and our sister fellowships, NA and Cocaine Anonymous and Crystal Meth Anonymous. I mean, this is where we're getting the answer. This is where we're getting the answer. And we don't need to take the message that we're given and water it down because somebody suggested something. The message was intended to be full strength, not watered down. And in mainstream AA, and a lot of y'all have been around it for a long time, what we've got is a bunch of watered-down crap disguised as recovery. And that's why so many people have a tough time getting sober. And I just want to mention this going in the door, because Everybody that's in Alcoholics Anonymous or any of other sister fellowships, everybody that's in our rooms are not alcoholic and addict. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that have problems drinking. They're going to go to rational recovery or do some therapy or eat some antabuse and take some antidepressants, and they're going to get well. The problem is that some of those same people are hanging around our fellowships wanting to share their views on what this is all about. And if that stuff worked for us, because most of us have tried that, my sentiment is whatever works. I mean... If sitting naked in a teepee, sweating your ass off, works for you, then do it. Not knocking that. I'm saying it didn't get me sober. I tried it. Picture me sitting... No, never mind. I don't know. It's what the... Bill Wilson in the textbook... On page 155, some of you got your books, you can jot it down. But he's talking about Dr. Bob and his first meeting with Dr. Bob. And he says, he's talking of Dr. Bob. He says, this cat, he said he had a desperate desire to stop drinking, but saw no way out, for he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape. Painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, the man did not fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic. You with us? We live in a world where people don't understand what it is to be alcoholic. I work for a treatment center up in the Hill Country, and very nice hospital, very expensive, and some of y'all have been there, and now you're here, which says something. But a lot of people have problems understanding that just because you drink a lot doesn't mean you're an alcoholic. Just because you do a lot of drugs doesn't mean you're a drug addict. People stop every day. They wake up one day with this big hangover, nose all bloody, and they say, I'm not going to do this anymore. And they don't. They just, on their own power, they just stop. But they told them in treatment to go to AA, so they're going to go. But they don't need to be there because they stopped on their own power. They see they didn't need this thing called God. They didn't have to talk about the 12 steps. They didn't have to work the 12 steps. All they could do was just sit in the meetings and talk about any freaking thing they wanted, and everything's just going to be okay. And I'm going to tell you right now, going in the door, because so some of y'all can go ahead and leave the room now. I think the problem in Alcoholics Anonymous today, and it is a problem worldwide, I speak in many countries, folks, and I'm telling you, the problem is the same here, it's the same as in Europe, it's the same in Canada, it's the same everywhere. It's called open discussion meetings. Non-literature-based open discussion meetings, where the topic is your day. And if you like those meetings... at the risk of offending you, you're probably not one of us. If you can stay sober in that environment, you're probably not one of us. That's probably the roughest thing I've ever said from the podium. Buried another friend of mine 2 weeks ago. Meeting makers make it, not. Found him, he'd been dead 2 days, 3 days, they don't know, in his apartment. Alcohol, pills. Lots of meetings. Wouldn't come to our meetings because y'all talk about the big book too much. And I'm not sure about this God thing. Okay? So go talk about your freaking weed eater one more time. See what happens. That's the results that we get. If you're the real alcoholic, folks, if you're a real drug addict, you must have a spiritual experience. That's not an option. It's not maybe if you want. It's if you want to recover from this disease, that's what you get to get. And it's guaranteed by working the 12 steps. Most open and roomy program out there, folks. Anybody that wants to take shots at this fellowship can talk about anything they want, but those steps are so open and so roomy, it's not even funny. We even let you worship a God of your own understanding. You don't have to pray to my God. You don't have to be a Christian. You don't have to do... You got to pray to something. That's pretty simple, isn't it, folks? Maybe that's where my passion comes from. Maybe that's why I get in so much trouble. Because I work in an industry where I get to watch hundreds of people die needlessly of this disease. In my 18 years, when I finally got sober in 1987, since, I cannot tell you how many funerals I've been to about people that could have gotten this just as easy as I got it. When somebody finally told me the truth, I grabbed onto it with both hands because I knew intuitively that they were telling me the truth. You water this message down and let somebody do it any way they want. That's why, listen folks, that's why I love places like this, because we're going to talk straight out of the book. If you want it, great. If you don't want it, go try some more. Go bop till you drop. We got to understand what the disease is, folks. We got to understand what the problem is. What difference does it make? I hear people come up after I lecture. What does it make? I think I got a problem, so I'm so... No. No. Mm-mm. How can you fix a car if you don't know what's wrong with it? First thing you got to do is find out what's wrong with it. See, when I found out that I wasn't just a little problem drinker, an abuser, but that I was dying of a fatal progressive illness, I got real open-minded real quick. And so will you. And so will the people that you can't sponsor. But you got to qualify them first. Find out if they even need to be here or not. Ask them, are they ready? Just exactly what we read and how it works. Are you ready to go to any... What a great name for a treatment center. Any links. What a... Unbelievable. Are you ready to go to any links? Because if you're not, screw you. Go away. Y'all need to know, if I was sitting at an anniversary meeting at little group in town, I wouldn't be talking like this. But I'm in a gathering full of people that are cut from the same cloth I am. The chances of us having a little disco drunk sitting in this group is pretty slim, you know? Pretty slim. I can just tell by looking at some of y'all. Y'all are the real McCoy. And I love it. And I absolutely love it. That's why I felt so out of place in AA when I first got here, because I felt so different from everybody else in the room. I'm dying of a fatal illness. I can't seem to stop drinking. But all you want to talk about is your freaking divorce one more time. I don't understand that. We're going to talk about it, folks. I'm getting there. And I'm watching the clock. I'm not going to wear anybody out tonight. Here. Now, I know. Y'all all say that. And then you get cranky with me when I talk too long. Hear me. This is Annie Lynn. Bring out the breakfast tacos. All right, God dang it. Okay. I grew up in the hill country drinking. My father was an alcoholic. I caught some flack 2 weeks ago from a guy who says, you call yourself your father an alcoholic, and this is a self-diagnosed disease, and he's dead. The disease killed him. I don't think he gives a rat's ass if I call him an alcoholic or not. That's what he was. That's where my brother and I, identical twin brother, we caught the genetic bullet. Guys, alcoholism and drug addiction is genetic. If you're sitting in this gathering right here, still blaming your mama or that bad thing that happened to you for why you're an alcoholic and addict, you need to come up with a different saw, because it's not working anymore. Alcoholism and drug addiction is absolutely genetic. You're born that way. You would have developed a problem with the alcohol and dope had the bad thing not happened to you. You with me? I'm not, please, you hear me, guys, all of you. I love every one of you. If any of you in here heard me say that stuff's not important, you didn't hear me right. Did that stuff exacerbate it and make it worse? You damn right. That's why we need to address it. Thank God for good therapy. Thank God for these 12 steps that help us get past that stuff. But that didn't cause it. I had a great family, folks. I need to tell you, I had a wonderful family. Mom's still alive, painting up a storm, losing her eyesight in Kerrville, and just, she's a wonderful family. I was in the food business, and it was perfectly acceptable to drink, and I drank more than anybody. Should have known there was a problem. I intuitively knew there was a problem. And by the time I was 20 years old, I was picking up the phone book to call Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't call them, but I picked up the phone book. You know, it was one of those deals. I knew there was a problem. Just like a lot of y'all, I know there's a problem. I ended up moving to Houston in an apprenticeship program, and I traveled around a lot. I got pretty successful pretty quick. I've always been a little quick, and not quick-minded necessarily, but a fast worker. Y'all know what I mean? And discovered some methamphetamine along the way, which enhanced We call it living better chemically, but it was good. And it allowed me to drink more on top of that. So I spent 15 years or so, folks. The month that our co-founder, Bill Wilson, passed away, I started drinking, folks. And I was off to the races from the beginning. The deal that separated me from so many people that I met in Alcoholics Anonymous is that I had a bunch of what we would call successful years drinking and drugging. I wasn't going to jail. I wasn't robbing liquor stores. I wasn't doing all the goofy stuff that so many of you guys eventually end up doing. And so at the attempt of saving a marriage in the early 80s, I went to my first AA meeting. And I was already taking antidepressants early. About the mid-70s, I started taking antidepressants because of a depressive disorder. Quote, y'all with us? Probably some of the pills that y'all are still taking now. And I don't have a problem with that. I was fortunate to be able to get off all that stuff. How can I put this gently? I walked into my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and full of questions, and I didn't know what this was all about. And they asked me if I had a problem with alcohol, and I said yes, and they said welcome, and I sat down, and then we talked about everything under the sun except alcoholism. Everything. Relationships, jobs, traffic, weather. Oh, Jesus. This is the early 80s, and inner child work had just begun, and we had people talking about that, and it was cool. I'm committed to try to get sober, but I can't stand the meetings. I hated Alcoholics Anonymous. I enjoyed the first few dozen I went to. It was interesting listening to how screwed up y'all were, but I couldn't relate. If we weren't talking about some outside issue that we're not supposed to talk about, we were talking about your problems. We were talking about your war stories, and I couldn't relate to your war stories. And I watch people do it every day to day. Unless you're in my meeting, and I'll shut you down in a heartbeat. War stories are cool, guys. Any of you old geezers in here that are getting tweaky because I'm talking about war stories, I just need to set your mind at ease. One of the most powerful things I have is my story. In a 12-step call, it is indispensable. How can I do a 12-step call if I don't have a story to talk to this guy about? How am I going to get some identification going? But meetings, folks, were never intended. Meetings, folks, were never intended as a 12-step call. They weren't in the olden days, and they aren't today. They have become that. A 12-step call is when you get with somebody that doesn't know about this program, and you talk to them a little bit about it, you share some of your story, and he shares some of his story, just like Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob did on page 155 where we were just reading, and they get the little guy's interest, and then y'all start talking about the solution. And you see if he wants to get well, qualify him, find out if he needs to be one of us, and then take him to a meeting. So he can hear other people share about the solution. That's the way it was intended to be. What have we turned them into today? Nonstop. Guys, the number one complaint that I hear about Alcoholics Anonymous is that I'm sick and tired of listening to the war stories. And my question is, unless you happen to be in a 12-step call every day, why are you hearing war stories? If you'll read the archival material, it says quite clearly, read the simplest archival material, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. It'll tell you point blank. We didn't talk about our war stories in meetings. We knew how to drink. What we didn't know is how to stay sober. Let's talk about the solution. That's why we can't keep the young adults in our meetings. We drive them crazy with the goddamn war stories. Drive them nuts. Going to listen to you about how you got 60 DWIs one more time. We're never going to get around to talking about a 4-step. We're never going to get around talking about the spiritual experience because we're too busy talking about how you got here. Guys, the guy screwed up his courage and got it all together and walked in the back door. Why is it that we want to bore him spitless with another war story? Some of you just look like you've been slapped. Well, I thought that was what we were supposed to be doing. You thought wrong. Quit. Number one complaint I get at our hospital. We got 1,000 patients through their year. The number one complaint is, why don't you go to AA? I hate AA. Why? They tell war stories until the cows come home, and they're constantly pissing and moaning about their problems. Amen. We just read the traditions. It tells us what our primary purpose was. It's Carry the message. Carry the message. What's the message? 12 steps. That's our primary purpose. We can't seem to get to the primary purpose because we're too busy trying to fix your problems. Am I saying that the people in our fellowship can't help us with our problems? Heavens, no. Of course they can. Look at this room. Look at this gathering that we've got out here on this patio. There's hundreds of us out here. How much experience could we share with that newcomer? Why do we feel like we have to do it in a meeting? Book gets crystal clear. Book gets crystal clear. It's not giving that's in question. It's when and how to give. When we allow the newcomer to start depending on us instead of God, we're doing them a disservice. Isn't that right? Lady comes in and she's having a relationship problem. So we spend an hour talking about relationships. How in the hell is she ever going to get connected to God if we're going to fix every problem she's got? And why I'm asking the question while I'm on the subject, what makes you so damn smart that you know what she's supposed to do? Can you imagine walking into a room full of Alcoholics Anonymous and wanting to talk about relationships? God damn. Well, I've been married 6 times. Let me tell you what I think. No. I don't think so. Why is it that we think that we've got to be junior therapists in our fellowship? That's why so many people don't want to sponsor people, because they're afraid they're going to hurt somebody. You know what my job as a sponsor is? I'm sponsoring Paul Say. You know what my job with him is? To qualify him, to teach him about our fellowship, and to work him through the 12 steps as rapidly as I can get his little round butt through them. And then God, who he gets to get connected to through the process, gets to teach him what to do. Make sense? I want to get back to my story real quick, but I want to mention something that happened to me this week. This has happened hundreds of times in my sobriety, but it happened. I was in New York last weekend at a conference up there, and was coming back on a plane, and this little guy that I met out west at a talk, he'd called me and tried to get me to talk out there, and I couldn't, and he called again. I said, God dang, I told you, I'm booked up, I can't. And he called back, and I said, damn it, he wore me down, and I went and talked anyway, and I doubled up, and it was just a rough week, but I love this guy. But I hadn't talked to him since I left, just busy, and just hadn't. And I'm coming back from New York on the plane, and his little, you know, face crossed my mind, you know, and it's like, I wonder how he's doing. And 2 nights later, I think of him again. And of course, I know today what that's about, because my spirit is awakened today. I'm open to what's out there in the universe. You with me? Some of you are nodding your head. Some of you think, this guy's fucking crazy. I know. But the book says we will intuitively know how to handle certain situations. The certain situation is, do I put this off? And what? Anyway, the next day, I take time and go back through my date planner, and I find his number, and I call him on the telephone. It's about lunch, and I call him on the phone, and I recognize his voice, and I said, buddy, how you doing? And he starts to cry. He said, why are you calling me? And I said, you've just been on my mind. And he cries harder. See, he's in a little bind. He's not drinking. He's sober. He's dry. Okay? He's the spiritual malady has come back. He's had a fight with a guy in the group, a little chicken shit resentment, and it's blocked him, and he's not going to meetings now. You know, one of those I'll show you things. But he's dying because he's a real McCoy, see? And he's in trouble. And out of the clear blue sky, I call him and encourage him to get back. And before the conversation's over, we're both crying and having a good laugh about how cool this was. But I mean, why didn't I call him 2 weeks ago? Because it wasn't time to call him 2 weeks ago. It was time to call him right then and there. Y'all follow? That's how God works. That's the stuff that's available for everyone. All of you guys in here, you know, it's like, do I take the job or do I not take the job? Do I stay or do I move? Do I buy the car or do I not buy the car? Who knows? Who knows what's right for you? When are we going to start putting this fellowship back where it belongs, guys? Right in the lap of God. The higher power that you pray to every day. Why do you think we're doing that? Do you think we're doing that just so we can stay sober one stupid day at a time? The whole purpose of this is so that we can get conscious contact with that power. And that's where so many people in our fellowships are missing the boat. If all of this was about just not staying sober one stupid day at a time, guys, we're missing the point. This is about a cooler, much more productive life. And that's where people need to be. And if you're not there, it's nobody's fault but yours. Unless, of course, you're going to open discussion meetings where they don't have time to talk about it. I'm going to tell you, and then it's not your fault. How can you blame somebody if they've never heard the solution? I'm around Alcoholics Anonymous for 7 years and I don't even have a big book. I'm in AA for 7 years and don't even have a sponsor. But I'm a meeting-making fool. Old geezers come up, buddy, don't worry about doing any of this service work right now. You just chill out, sit on your butt there, and just meeting makers make it, don't you know? And you just keep going, 90 meetings in 90 days, and everything's going to be okay. God, how I would have loved to have made 90 days. I just couldn't, because I'm the cat that could not drink, guys. I do great, guys. I've got this thing called a physical allergy. Simple, clear. I put the crap in my body. Something happens different in me because of the way I'm wired, and I sometimes overdrink. I can't control how much I drink. I don't do it every time, but at certain times, I drink too damn much. You with us? And I know that's the problem. But my head says this time is going to be different, right? So you couple this physical piece with this mental piece, this mental obsession, and that's what kills alcoholics and addicts. I got a mind that tells me I don't have a problem. It tells me I got a problem today because my ass is on fire, and the judge is looking over his bench at me, you know, and the wife has got me on the couch. Oh, I got a problem. But 2 weeks later, I don't remember all of that. The book says I will not remember the consequences of even a week or a month ago. That's another reason that I don't like to do war stories in meetings. What the hell are we trying to do? The book said on page 24, you're not going to remember the consequences of even a week or a month ago. You're not even going to remember your own stupid war stories. What makes you think you're going to remember mine? I was in a meeting 2 weeks ago and a guy looked over and says, you don't want to end up like me, do you? Guys, folks, please, any of you old-timers in here, any of you guys, if you ever lean across the table and say something like that to somebody, try to catch yourself and stop yourself from just saying something so goofy. What, are you going to threaten somebody into sobriety? Do you think for a second they're ever going to be a loser like you? Why don't the next time you go to that meeting, introduce yourself as a recovered alcoholic and a cat who's not obsessing about alcohol, and tell them you got the coolest life imaginable, and you'll be glad to show them how to have the same life. Yeah. I guarantee you, that'll get the little bastard's attention. In and out for 7 years and couldn't stand it, left, swore I would never go back. I was so frustrated because I'm watching a lot of you guys stay sober in those meetings, and I don't know what you're doing to do it, but I am convinced. I was talking to one of the little guys earlier, and they were talking about, you know, I just felt like I was weak, and that was me. I felt like I was a freaking loser. I'd promised every person I knew that I was going to get sober and let them down. My family, girlfriends, wife eventually. And I'm crazy. I'm still crazy. But I was nuts then, guys. My head wouldn't shut up. There was no serenity. I couldn't lay down without a thousand voices telling me what a worthless piece of shit I was. And only time I could get any relief is if I got just drunk enough or took the right amount of drugs. And then I could get some... I'm drinking for ease and comfort, folks. And I'm saying it again. Not once in 7 years did somebody tell me that I could get that same ease and comfort by working the 12 steps. They said I could get that same sense of ease and comfort by going to 90 meetings in 90 days. And that's a fucking lie. That's a lie. Meetings. Guys, going to meetings and not drinking Don't treat alcoholism. If y'all don't hear anything else I say tonight, y'all need to get this. Going to meetings and just not drinking will not treat alcoholism. It will give you some dry time, but it will not treat the disease of. And you will gradually become so uncomfortable in your skin, the internal condition will come back, and the depression and the boredom and the low self-esteem and the feeling of uselessness. Y'all with us? That no sense of direction that the book talks about on page 52. It will come back and your head will say, I cannot stand this pain any longer. And the other little part of your little brain will say, you could probably smoke a joint. Now, this is what it's telling them today. Yeah, I need some Lenista. Yeah, that's the ticket. If you're taking Lenista, you need to pick up a new desire chip. That's not my opinion. Stop today. If you can't sleep, there's a reason. And it's spiritual in nature. Do the work and you will sleep like a baby. That's in my experience. Here's the deal. I got in my truck after work one day, November 12th, and stopped and got a 12-pack of beer and went to my house and picked up a stack of return checks and was living in a little apartment by myself with a couple of stinky ferrets. And God, they stunk. I loved those ferrets. I did. And opened the return checks and was so disgusted with myself. I'm 35 years old and I bankrupted another checking account, just like some of y'all have probably done. And I'm just done. I have tried so hard. There is nobody that I know that works harder than me. I've got great work ethics. I've never missed a day's work because of my drinking and drugging, ever. I've shown up absolutely blistered before. Don't get me wrong, you fun, but I showed up as I got great work ethics. But I'm so frustrated because I can't ever amount to anything. I can't put anything together. There's no woman in my life. I've got no friends. You guys know when your buddies won't even hang out with you. It's screwed up. You know, it's always their fault. Because you know why they don't? Because I'm blaming them for everything. Anything that's going wrong in my life, I'm blaming you. And that's what I learned in 10 years of therapy. It's blame somebody else. I'm not knocking therapy. It's good stuff. But I'm saying that's... Geez, I spent 10 years in therapy talking about everything under the sun and then being so depressed when I couldn't stay sober. What's the point of doing this? Well, you'll stop drinking. So we'll talk about the crap one more time, but I never stopped drinking. Because talking about stuff won't get me sober. Program is about action. Action. What is my skinny little butt doing? I don't know why that's so complicated. Saw an internet article. We were just talking about it. Saw an internet article somebody sent me about our Mel G. Y'all know who I'm talking about? Wink, wink. Yeah, and he's back in another treatment center. And the guy that's had this treatment center he didn't go to is pissed because he needs to come to ours because we understand that alcoholism is not a disease. Then it's all about stuff in our life, and if you'll finally talk about the stuff in your life, everything will be okay. And I'm sitting there thinking, God, guys, 10 years and hard, rigid therapy, I've talked about everything I can talk about and still can't stop drinking because my book says no human power can relieve me from alcoholism. No therapist can fix me. No treatment center can fix me. No woman can fix me. Not for long, anyway. Come on, guys. A big plate of spaghetti will fix me for a short period of time, but it doesn't last very damn long. So I went to the medicine cabinet and got a bottle of pills in my little apartment. It's a little efficiency, little one-room apartment. Nice. And tried to commit suicide. I just, it's the coward's way out. But I think y'all know where I'm coming from. You know, it's not... There was nothing in me that wanted to die. You know, I just could not go through another day feeling the way I was feeling. I'm tired of being a loser. I'm 35 and my life has passed me by. And I've lost my youth to alcohol and drugs. And I'm hopeless. I've tried AA. I've tried therapy. I'm taking 7 pills a day, guys. I've tried the medication. And it's not working. The only time I feel okay is when I drink. And now you want me to stop that. And I want to stop that. But the further away I get from that drink, the worse I feel. So I go back. That's alcoholism. Plain and simple. I heard a voice that night about the time those pills hit my stomach. Voice that said, don't do this, go back to AA. It said, Chris, don't do this, go back to AA. Don't know what. I believe it was God's intervention. I heard the voice a couple of 3 times that night. It freaked me out. Because it wasn't just a thought. Chris, don't do this. Go back. It was, Chris, don't do this. Go back to AA. And it scared me. I made myself sick, threw the pills up, laid down on a bed, passed out. Woke up the next morning and heard the voice one more time. It's the last I've ever heard that voice. I went and got a doctor that morning and went to work. And at 6 o'clock, I walked in the back door of an AA meeting that I had heard about. It was close, and I was running late and felt like crap. And so I went to this meeting. It was a literature-based meeting. I'd never been to one. But I'd been warned that only people that hung out there were big book thumpers. And I wasn't really sure what a big book thumper was, but I knew I didn't want to be one. You know, so it was not the kind of place you were going to pick up a date at, I can promise you that. And as bad as I wanted to get well, though, I'm not sure I wanted to do that. But I walked in the back door, and sure enough, everybody in there had a big book, and they were all smoking just like you guys, and it was great. I loved it. You know, what is it about these AA meetings where they still let you smoke? And they say, try to hold your smoking down, and everybody lights up a third cigarette and puts it in their mouth. It's like, what's that about? Just to show you can? I don't know. And I walked in and sat down, and a little girl got between me and the door and wouldn't let me out because they're laughing and I'm feeling real insecure and self-conscious. And I spend most of my days walking around with this patch that won't fit properly. And so I always look like I'm wearing an earmuff most of the time. And I don't feel good. You know, I want to leave. And she won't let me leave. She just says, nope, sit down. That's what I'm saying, guys. I've said it from 1,000 podiums. Thank God that little 19-year-old girl wasn't off in a young adult meeting someplace. She was in mainstream AA doing what she was supposed to do. And guys, I mean, I was a scary something. I'm scary now. But I'm big full beard and hair down to my back. And, you know, just hadn't bathed in days. And this little girl just hugged, just like I was a long-lost brother. Come on in. Got me a cup of coffee. And they went around the room. The chairperson had seen me up in North Texas for years and went around the room. And they said, Chris, buddy, he told the people in the room, says, we got a newcomer. He's not a newcomer. He's been around forever, but he can't seem to stay sober. And everybody laughed. And I didn't like that a bit. And because I'm feeling a bit sensitive, don't you know? And they said, why don't we do something just for grins? Why don't we share some hope with this cat? Why don't you share some experiences that you've had in sobriety? Share how your life has changed as a result of working the steps. You with us? What a great topic for a meeting. Those cats went around the room and they talked about stuff that I could understand. And it was the stuff that I needed. Guys, I didn't need to be scared, and I didn't need to hear about your fucking divorce one more time. I needed some hope. Is it possible to wake up in the next few mornings without obsessing about alcohol? Is it possible to go to a social event without wanting to drink? Could you possibly ever ask a girl out on a date unless you were drunk? But that's the stuff that the newcomer's wondering. Will the shakes ever go away? Will Herman ever start working again? Yeah. If there's any newcomers in here, let me tell you. Yeah. Yes. It may be little, but it works great. All right. So here's what happened. The guy after the meeting got up next to me and says, Chris, old buddy, we need to do something a little different with you here. We need to really kind of cut to the chase here. And they sat down, they talked to me about what alcoholism was, just exactly what Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob did. And they qualified me. Yep, that's me. Are you willing to go to any length to get what we have? And I said, well, one day at a time. He said, that's not what I ask you. Guys, this piece right here offends more than anything else I say because it's so mainstream AA. The big book talks about staying sober for keeps. It says we live life one day at a time. It says we have a daily reprieve based on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. It does not say we get up every morning and decide if we want to stay sober or not. Because let me tell you, there's going to be some mornings you're not even going to want to live in early sobriety. You down with this? This is for keeps, folks. I know I need God. I don't know if I'll be sober in the morning, but I can guarantee you if I keep doing what I've been doing, the obsession to use will stay away, and I got as good a chance as anybody to live the rest of my life without drinking and drugging. And that's the hope we need to be. We got to stop representing this program like we're a bunch of sick people trying to get well. Recovery, I heard somebody in treatment the other day say, recovery is not an event. The hell it's not. The first time you wake up in the morning and realize that you don't want to do any cocaine, that you don't want to drink any alcohol, and that you're perfectly comfortable in your skin, it will be an event. Guys, those early days, they had me doing everything. They had me working. They had me cleaning coffee cups. They had me on the cleanup committee. They had me answering the stupid telephones. They wouldn't let me out of their sight. Y'all with me? I mean, the next morning, they had me back in the room, and we did a third-step prayer, and then they threw me a notebook on the table and said, let's start working on a fourth step. Boom, 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 just like they did in the olden days, guys. They only took a few weeks to work the steps back then, a month at the most. And today, we've got hospitals out there telling people to take their time to work the steps. If you've got time to work, take your time to work the steps, then you're not one of us. Are you powerless over this stuff or not? That's me. There's only a small percentage of us that are. Jesus, take your time to work the steps. You didn't get this sick overnight. You're not going to get well overnight. Screw you. How do you know what God's going to do? I get so sick of that crap I could puke. It's somebody's opinion. Show me in the book where it says that. Guys, don't misunderstand me. I'm going to tell you, 2 weeks after I got in that room in 1987, 2 weeks, I'm sitting on the tailgate of my truck, and there's a big old full moon up there. It's colder than hell in November up in Dallas, Texas. And I remember sitting on that tailgate and realizing that I'm surrounded by liquor stores, and my dope dealer lives in the apartment complex where I live, and I don't want to drink. The obsession somehow in those 2 weeks as a result of getting off my butt and getting involved in this fellowship, I don't want to drink. The obsession's been lifted. Guys, that's 18 years ago, and not once have I wanted to drink and drug since then. How can you not get excited about that? Exactly what the book says would happen, happened. It took me years to recover physically, folks. Do y'all understand that? Financially, it took me years to recover. With my families, the only place in the book it says we will always be recovering is with our families. And that has proved to be true. It's much better today, thank God. Y'all with us? But it's going to take some time to heal some of these wounds. But guys, you can get taken to a place of neutrality around the alcohol and dope very quickly. Work the steps. Get connected to God. It's God that gets me sober, folks. The steps don't. This is not some chicken shit self-help program. This is a spiritual program of action. Work the steps. All the gunk that's blocking me from that power, all of a sudden I can hear God's intuitive word. That's what it's about. Life has been something up ever since. Been perfect? Nope. I've stayed active. I have a sponsor. I sponsor a bunch of guys. I continue to do the steps. I continue to stay active in the work. I study the history. I try to be an active member in our fellowship. I got to tell you, folks, I went through a divorce about 4 years ago that was a bear. Closest thing I'll ever had to a kid, little stepson, was involved in that divorce. And that's I am still to this day upset about that. There were days that I wanted to die. Not once did I want a drink. We got too many people walking around this fellowship painting a picture that every day is the day that we could relapse. Too many people running from things called triggers. Oh my God. Hey, I got a trigger for you. It's nighttime. I think it's great stuff to teach. I think in early sobriety we need to pay attention to the stuff around us that bothers us. I'm perfectly in agreement with that. But not to hear it in an AA meeting. It's crap. If you can't go anywhere on this earth, the book says quite clearly, if you can't go anywhere you want, you still have the mind of an alcoholic. And you're something's wrong with your spiritual connection. You're down with that? Let me make a real quick point. I'll let you guys go. This has been on my head for weeks now, and this is the first time I've had a chance to try to put it into words, and I may flounder a little bit here, but one of the things I see working with the guys I sponsor is that we spend so much of our time just trying not to drink one day at a time that we forget to dream. We forget to get excited. Someone in Alcoholics Anonymous had to give me permission to get excited. There's an old man one time. He said, "Chris, why didn't you share in that meeting?" I says, "Everybody was kind of bummed out about that lady's husband, and I just didn't have anything." "Chris, it's okay to share something good in a meeting. It's the first time somebody gave me permission to share hope in a meeting." And that's what we all need to start understanding. Even if you're having a shitty day, if you want to get out of that day, start sharing some hope with a newcomer. No matter where you're at in the steps, 25 years sober, 30 years sober, 30 days sober. If you're in a bad spot, go help somebody else. That's what the book keeps trying to say. But, you know, early on in my, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wanted to start a little business I got kind of excited about it. I wanted to be a screen printer. I was out of the food business for a while, and my brother had some ends and was going to help me. And everybody in AA told me not to do that. "You can't do that. You haven't been sober long enough. Here it is. Don't make any major decisions for the first year." I understand. You need to take things with a grain of salt in early sobriety because you may be just kind of crazy. You know what I'm saying? But if you bounce it off some cats. But what happens is I see, listen guys, this is just my opinion. This is not in the book. But I see so many people not dream and not think about their future. They lose their excitement. They lose their luster. And they just hang around the fellowship. And pretty soon they get bored. You get bored because you're boring, for God's sakes. You get bored. I heard other speakers say it. But you get bored with your life. And we're sitting in this room, this gathering here, with all of this talent. You guys, all of us, in our own way. Look at Steve getting up and doing that auction. Now, talking about using somebody's talent for the fellowship. How cool is it that he can do that? All of you, all of us in here, from the most burnt up little crackhead we got in here to the lightest little Joel's got you beat, brother. I'm sorry. I've known him for 18 years. He is just flat fucked up. From the most burnout to the sharpest in the bunch, guys, we've all got something that God's given us. We've all got talents that God's just given us. And I don't know what that talent is. And the problem is that a lot of y'all don't know either. You're stuck in jobs that you don't like. You're in a relationship that you don't like. But you won't do anything about it. We've learned in our disease to be reactive. Everything's okay until I get fucking arrested. Wait a minute. Everything's okay until she gets pissed and leaves. And wait a minute. Why don't we be proactive? Why don't we start nipping this stuff in the bud? Let's take these amends seriously and go out and make the amends and start clearing up our path. Let's start looking at the stupid credit reports. You're going to need them. You're going to need your credit. Let's start using the time in our facilities like this to start taking care of, learning how to balance a checkbook. Taking care of our health. Hey, get off your ass. Do a little exercise. I didn't say go join the sports center and start running marathons. Walk around the block. Get away from the stupid TV for a few minutes. Y'all down with that? Take the goddamn... Take the headsets off your head. How can you hear God's word over that? Guys, I'm not saying don't stop listening to music. I listen to more music than anybody in this place. God, bring it on. But there's a time and a place for everything, guys. Let's be proactive and let's start taking care of ourselves. Y'all down with that? And get excited. Every one of y'all in this little gathering right here, guys, y'all are so blessed to have a nice place to light. And it was so cool to see my buddies from Florence come over. I just got to tell you, each and every single one of us gets to make the decision, which I got to make in 1987. You can start being today what God intended you to be. Or you can continue to make excuses for why you can't be that person. Everybody thinks they've got this figured out. Everybody thinks they've got the answer. Well, I can't go back to school. I did this myself. I can't go back to school. My SATs sucked. I took my SATs on LSD. They sucked. I freaked them out. I guarantee. I said that for years. I can never start a business. I don't know how to do that. You've got so many goddamn excuses why you can't do the stuff in this life. Every single one. Oh, I can't do. Talking to a guy on the plane coming back from New York. Oh, I can't do that. I can't. I'm bipolar. You take medication for that? Uh huh. Then shut the fuck up. You want to, because guys, we got to get down to brass. We got to get down to brass tacks about this. What's the truth? We've gotten sober. The obsession to use is lifted. Now we got to face life. I heard a patient in my lecture this week say it. He said, "Chris, the bottom line is we're afraid." Hallelujah! That this guy had that kind of insight. It's that we're afraid. We're afraid. What do you got to be afraid of? Who in the hell's got your back? Who?
God.
That's what I thought. Thank you. Because guys, that's the truth. For 7 years, that was rhetoric. God's with me. I turned it over. God's with me. I didn't even more believe that crap in a man in the moon. And in 1987, the way this was explained to me, and I'm starting to work the steps, and immediately I started getting contact with that power, and I started seeing that God could make some stuff happen in my life. And it's the same thing that's going to happen in your life. Guys, I'm around for a little bit after this to visit with you guys, and I hope I get a chance. I got business cards. It's got my email address on there and phone number and stuff. I'd love to stay in touch with any of you. If any of y'all ever need some encouragement to do this, what's the risk? What's the risk of doing what you always wanted to do? You're afraid somebody's going to laugh at you? So what? Just do it. Do it. At least you can die old and say, "At least I tried." Stop using your disease as an excuse for not doing this work. Because it's the coolest damn thing you'll ever attempt. Y'all cool?
Yeah.
We'll see you soon.